This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Your number, 877-217-5757. Matt Doyle producing. If you'd like to send us an email, talk@talklouisiana.org. And we remind you that we have a Facebook page. We'd like for you to go there, like the show, and find out more about what we do here every day. And you can go to our podcast anytime, day or night, and hear not only the show that is airing as we talk, but also all previous ones from March of 2 years ago. That would be 2017 to today. 877-217-5757. Joining us for a few minutes is State Representative Royce Duplessis, who's joined by Peter Robbins Brown, the Communications Director for the Power Coalition for Equity and Justice. They're here to talk about House Bill 422. It would repeal the state preemption of local control of minimum wage and family and sick leave policies. And Royce Duplessis is ducking out of a committee hearing, and he has joined us. And Representative, what's the status of the bill right now?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Happy to be on the show this morning to discuss the bill. As of right now, it is scheduled to be heard in House Labor, so it hasn't yet been heard. So we expect that it'll be heard within the next week or so. And that's the status. As you know, the process, it has to go through committee and to the House floor and then hopefully to the Senate. But we're at that stage right now where we're still waiting to have it heard in committee.
Why do you believe local control is the way to go on this?
Well, there's that old saying that local knows best. And, you know, when you just strip it down to its most fundamental elements, that's a reality. To have state and or federal government set policies that are blanket, you oftentimes run the risk of missing out on the nuances that each community has, that one community may be able to absorb certain costs that another community can't absorb. And that's the whole reason that we have local government. So, you know, to suggest that that the local governments can't govern themselves, I believe that's what preemption laws do. And I just think that's kind of counter to the whole reason of why we have local government. So you can drive neighborhood to neighborhood, and the cost of living can vary. We already know that the cost of living varies from city to city. Mm-hmm. So I think it just makes sense to empower local governments just to be able to make the decision. There's nothing mandatory about House Bill 422. All it does is it lifts the restriction. It gives governments, local governments, the ability to decide yes or no. Local government can decide, no, we don't want to set a higher minimum wage, that we want to keep it as it is because that's what's best for our local community. But again, you know, if you go from city to city, you're going to pay different costs, be it sales taxes, be it property taxes, and the cost of living certainly varies depending on that unique market and the trends that it's going through. So, you know, we just believe that it's a good tool to kind of bring government back home, bring it closer to the people, because local government is the best representation of how people truly feel.
All right, Royce Duplessis is a Democrat from New Orleans representing District 93, and many probably think that if this were to pass, that New Orleans might raise its minimum wage, probably would, but places like Baton Rouge might not. Lafayette probably certainly would not. So you may be doing something for your constituents, which is, after all, your job, but would this perhaps be counterproductive for those who say, look, the state's at $7.25 an hour for minimum wage, and we're one of only a handful of states still at that level, that it would be a disservice to the rest of the people of the state?
Right, and that's a good question. One of the things that you know that you won't hear me say, and you haven't heard me say, with this bill is I've never suggested what the number should be in terms of what a minimum wage should be. That's up to each local body to decide. Now, what New Orleans may or may not do, I think it's good to probably assume that New Orleans would take a hard look at setting its own minimum wage, but I don't know that New Orleans has gone through the process we need to go through to be able to say this is the dollar amount that we would set it at. And I think the point you just illustrated about how other cities may or may not set a higher minimum wage, to me, is indicative of why this law needs to be changed. It's because we're all not in agreement. And because cities have different views, so that's even more of a reason why we should empower local governments to make the decisions that are in their own best interest. And I believe that if the cities decide to take up that issue, they'll go through their own process. They're going to work with the local business community.
All right. Well, I know we're short on time, and we've got a few people who have posed questions, and here's one from Tracy asking about Joe Biden, the Democratic frontrunner for the presidential nomination of next year. He says there should be a $15 national minimum wage, that is one of his planks. If that were to happen, this argument would probably not be as vibrant as it is. But what about doing this at the national level and not having the state legislature have to get involved with it?
Well, you know, I'm state legislative level, so, you know, that's where my focus is. Unfortunately, the federal government hasn't moved in 10 years beyond 725. So to me, that's an indication that the federal government is telling the states, you all need to act. And the fact that the state of Louisiana has yet to set its own minimum wage, we're only one of five states. And the past 3 years, Governor John Bel Edwards has pushed for a modest increase, and we still haven't acted. That's a sign of what the state is saying, that the city needs to act. That's my interpretation. So I can't suggest that I'm necessarily in favor of the federal decision because it would be counter to my legislation. But, I mean,
all right, you're starting to fade on us, and we've already gone into overtime with Representative Duplessis, so we let him get back to his committee hearing. But the bill is 422 in the House, and Peter Robbins Brown is here to talk with us as well about this, the Power Coalition for Equity and Justice. And this also involves family and sick leave policies, doesn't it? How would it affect those?
Again, it's the same as with minimum wage. We would just be giving cities and or parishes the opportunity to set those. So, you know, they can take a look at their communities, see, you know, this is a public health issue. So they can look at their, you know, local public health needs and say that, you know, workers here, they can earn a certain amount of days. You know, they work for 6 months, maybe they earn 6 days, but it would be up to the local.
Do you sense any momentum for this? We have a very conservative legislature, Republican-controlled. The governor has pushed for an increase in the minimum wage now for 4 years to no avail. He's also pushed for equal pay to no avail. Is there a movement in an election year to perhaps change the inertia, or is this a lost cause?
Well, I see two major indications of there being a lot of momentum behind this. The first would be that, for instance, the Louisiana survey just came out a couple weeks ago and showed that 81% of the state is in favor of this, of raising the minimum wage. You can't get 81% of people to agree that ice cream is good, you know. So to see such an overwhelming majority of Louisianans in favor of raising a minimum wage, I think if you were to ask, the question wasn't asked in that survey, but if you were asked, do you think the local should have control, you might even see a larger percentage in favor of that. So, you know, if there is some pushback in the legislature, you have to wonder, who are they representing, the people or some other group?
Well, the polls show American people and perhaps even those in Louisiana are in favor of background checks at gun shows, but yet the state and federal legislatures, at least our delegation, they say, no way, Jose.
Again, I would just ask, who are they representing? You know, if the people are so overwhelmingly in favor of something and politicians refuse to do that, who are they representing? And I would say, just on the momentum, you know, I want to point out, you know, we do have, there's a statewide grassroots organizing effort going on in support of House Bill 422. It's called Unleash Local. You can go to unleashlocal.org to learn a little bit more about that. We have local chapters across the state, from Shreveport to New Orleans, Alexandria, Monroe, Lake Charles, Lafayette, as you mentioned. So it's a great way for people who are interested in this topic and who are part of that 81% to get involved.
We're visiting for a few minutes with Peter Robbins Brown, Communications Director for the Power Coalition for Equity and Justice on House Bill 422. Last year, he was involved with a group that was leading the charge successfully to change the non-unanimous jury law in Louisiana. That happened. Now this group, the Power Coalition, is fighting for local control of minimum wage and family and sick leave policies. And the legislature is weighing on these matters. Once again, matters that have been around for a long time are cropping up at the legislature. We'll talk with Mark Ballard more about this, but a listener asks about ERA. We've talked about it on the show. It did clear a Senate panel. Is the Power Coalition involved in this one?
We try to be involved in any issue that we think lifts people up. We are a people-centered movement. So, yeah, the ERA is certainly something that we're in favor of. We work in coalition with a lot of different organizations, many of whom are closely involved with the ERA fight.
And another listener notes that, reflecting on your remarks about how the lawmakers sometimes vote for special interests above the will of the people, and this particular listener, Holly, says that five of our six congressional members, as we have noted, voted against the renewal of the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act a few weeks ago. And that is an example of how public opinion does not always sway lawmakers into voting a certain way. The NRA was against this, and five of our six members of the U.S. House delegation sided with the National Rifle Association. 877-217-5757. We're back after this 90-second pause with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing, and a few more minutes with Peter Robbins Brown. Earlier we heard from Royce Duplessis, state representative and sponsor of House Bill 422, which is pending review at the Capitol. It would repeal the state preemption of local control of minimum wage and family and sick leave policies. Peter Robbins Brown is an interesting fellow. He's from Detroit, went to Rutgers University with a double major in history and philosophy, came here about 5 years ago, and has gotten involved in some major issues in our state, including last year the non-unanimous jury law, which was changed, and it won a Pulitzer by The Advocate. Yesterday we've heard from the editor, Mr. Peter Kovacs, but today it's Mr. Peter Robbins Brown, Communications Director for the Power Coalition. 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. And Gustavo in Goodwood says, no problem with $15, just be ready to pay a whole lot more for everything.
So that's actually not true. There's many studies looking at because the federal law minimum wage has remained the same for a little over a decade now. It's provided fertile research ground into minimum wage, which is actually one of the most researched topics in the world. There are plenty of studies, including one from the Federal Reserve, that look at price increases as a result of minimum wage. Price increases after minimum wage are very small. Moreover, prices have been increasing for decades while wages have remained stagnant. So raising the minimum wage is something where we're just trying to rebalance that system a little bit. And again, we're talking about very tiny price increases, whereas we're talking about very important wage increases.
Well, some believe you're tilting at windmills, that this is not going to happen, but you're out there valiantly trying. What's the sentiment at the Capitol right now from the lawmakers? You talk about all these things that might be convincing to them, but some are quite skeptical about that actually making an impact on votes when it comes down to how they'll vote on this measure and others.
Well, I'm not a lobbyist, so I don't, I spend some time at the Capitol, but I can't really speak to the sort of inside the dome stuff. I'm, more of a researcher and, communications specialist.
Well, Royce Duplessis says he's not getting into whether the minimum wage should be $8, $9, $10, $11, where it is going to be in Arkansas based on a vote of the people there. What would be a good minimum wage in this state?
I mean, that's hard to say. Again, that's why I think this bill is great. It says locals get to decide what works for their community. Again, what works in New Orleans doesn't necessarily work in New Roads, right? So, I think trying to say this is the number is a difficult proposition, which, again, is why I think 422 is a good bill.
House Bill 422 from Royce Duplessis. Who's the Senate sponsor?
Wesley Bishop.
Okay. So you've got some good Democrats, but as mentioned, Democrats are in a distinct minority at the Capitol. The Republicans control the legislature, and you've got to have bipartisan support.
Sure. Well, I don't think this is a partisan issue. I mean, we're talking about people's livelihoods here. I think it's good policy for people. I also think it's good economic policy. We hear some arguments against it, on the economic side. But when you look at, again, when you look at the research, when you talk to locally owned small businesses, they are in favor of this because they already pay living wages. Often they're being undercut by giant national and multinational companies that take those profits out of the community. They take it out of the state. Sometimes they take it out of the country, putting it into, offshore accounts. When we're talking about, these giant fast food chains or dollar stores that are paying poverty wages.
Patrick in Innisfil Estates. Patrick, you're on the air with Peter Robbins Brown of the Power Coalition. Hi, Patrick. Good morning to you.
Chains, that he's talking about, they're going to be able to raise the wages, but the mom and pop are not going to be able to do it. So, you know, and especially North Baton Rouge, what I see is a lack of business. So how is raising minimum wage, letting people get 6 days off? Why don't we just pay people to stay at home and not even come to work? Would that maybe work as well? I mean, is that a good idea? And I doubt 80% of the people support you. You don't represent the people. You represent the Communist Party, because that's what you're preaching is communism.
Yeah. I think it's far from communism. I think, you know, people making a living wage is capitalism, you know. And as far as, you know, mom and pop stores, again, I think when you look at it, you know, we talk to a lot of small business owners, local small business owners, and they already pay living wages. They live in the community. The people that they hire, they want those people to stay with them, to, you know, work with them for a long time. They take care of their people. So I think that this is, you know, far from communism. Again, I think it's the best form of capitalism.
David in Shenandoah. David, good morning. You're on with Peter Robbins Brown.
Good morning, Jim. I was just wanted to make an observation that if, as far as mom and pop stores, you know, there's a consumer price index that's going to affect this situation, plus the a COLA raise, or as far as something built into the legislation that was.
All right. Would there be a cost of living adjustment built into it, or is this?
Again, this is just returning it to local control. So if a local government decided to build COLA into it, that would be their decision.
All right. 877-217-5757. Mark Ballard on deck. And thanks to David in Shenandoah for calling. And Ann on Bluebonnet. Hi, Ann. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes, good morning. I was addressing the comment of the caller who said mom and pop stores won't be able to afford this. That's not the right way to look at this. The people that are doing the work deserve a living wage. Mom and pop need to treat those people fairly, okay? That's the bottom line. You cannot live on a $7.25-hour minimum wage. It's just unconscionable in this day and age. So that just doesn't carry any water.
And the other thing I would add, you know, I mean, obviously I agree with that point of view. I would also add that when we raise wages for people, we're talking about low-income people. They're not putting it into a 401k or something or buying a yacht. They're spending that money at locally owned businesses, often mom-and-pop stores. So when we look at mom-and-pop stores, they're looking at increased revenues. You're talking about people who, you know, can't really afford to get by. If they are going to the grocery store or whatever, they're buying the cheapest items and very few of those items. Now we're talking about giving them enough money to, instead of buying, you know, just the condensed milk and the cheapest loaf of bread, they can actually buy enough food to put in their pantry.
We've got Peter with us for a few more moments, Peter Robbins Brown of the Power Coalition, and we're sliding in Mark Ballard a little ahead of schedule to get his take on House Bill 422, which will be heard soon. Wesley Bishop, the Senate sponsor, and we heard from the House sponsor, Royce Duplessis, for House Bill 422. I don't know what the Senate number is. Maybe you do, Peter.
Anyway,
it would repeal the state preemption of local control of minimum wage and family and sick leave policies. And Mark, as you know, the last few years, the governor, with the power and the majesty of his office, has been supportive of measures to raise the minimum wage for the entire state and to have equal pay laws in Louisiana that would ensure equal pay for equal jobs, not depending on your gender. But he has been unsuccessful. Is there any movement, any momentum that looks like it's mounting at the Capitol, or is this once again a lost cause?
Well, I lean towards the lost cause category on this. I mean, I just don't think that the minimum wage or the Equal Rights Amendment or the Equal Pay Amendment or laws are going to make it through, particularly the House. I mean, they may make it past the Senate, but they're not going to make it through the House. That's just the way it is, I guess it is. One issue that going to be coming up with Representative Duplessis's bill is that the House and the Senate have shown repeatedly over this particular session how little they want local governments to have a say-so in these affairs. In most states, local governments are kind of their own thing. The representative said that it's local knows better. But in Louisiana, and I mean throughout the entire history of the state, we've always had a top-down government, and efforts during this session to do something about that have all failed.
877-217-5757. We're going to talk with Mark about a few different matters, but Peter, we've got about 30 seconds. Any parting shots in your
effort? I think Mr. Ballard brings up a really interesting point, that we have this incredibly top-down, heavy-handed system here in Louisiana, yet when you talk to Louisianans, they always talk about we're small government, we are in favor of, you know, we don't want the government intruding, yet we have this system. So I think it just goes against not just the best interests of people in the state, but the values of people in the state to have this kind of top-down, heavy-handed approach.
Well, thank you, Peter Robbins-Brown.
Thank you.
We'll follow this with you, and we'll talk with Mark about this and other matters. And if you'd like to send an email, talk@talklouisiana.org. We're back after this brief pause for the news with the impeccable Karen Henderson. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana on WRKF, 877-217-5757. That's your number if you'd like to join the conversation. Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief from The Advocate, is with us. This is our Thursday custom. We're talking about what's going on at the Louisiana Legislature, and Mark, the social issues seem to crop up year after year, sometimes more pronounced than others, but this year all the familiar issues are again being debated, issues like abortion and the death penalty. And where do we stand as far as the legislation relating to those issues?
Well, I think that the abortion bills will probably make it through. One of them is by Senator Malkovich, a Democrat from Shreveport. It would make life begin at the first instance of a heartbeat in a fetus. And that's something a Mississippi law has passed, and it is in litigation right now. So they added on saying that, you know, if Mississippi prevails in its lawsuit, then this would come into play. And with that kind of a rider in the bill, it's likely that it's going to pass. The death penalty is interesting. I think the one bill, won by Senator Claytor, a Baton Rouge Republican, which would just do away with the death penalty altogether, has made it out of committee. It's supposed to come up on the it's scheduled to come up on the floor today. However, we hear that it's going to be postponed until next week, primarily because the Senate doesn't really take up controversial bills on Thursday, and it would slow them getting out of here. So that's coming up. Terry Landry, the representative from New Iberia, has his own bill, very similar to Dan Claytor's, which is going to be heard by the Administration of Criminal Justice House Committee next week, and that'll be coming up. The Muscarella bill is entering, that was just talked about in the news. Is interesting because one problem the state has is that the drugs that are in the state law that are required for lethal injection are just not being sold anymore by pharmaceutical companies. They don't want to be attached to the death penalty. And what his law would do is make it secret so maybe that they would sell them. It's been tried in several other states, and I guess we'll have to see. I mean, we're going to try it here. I mean, rather than just changing the method of execution, they're trying this method to sort of backdoor getting those lethal injection drugs. So it'll be interesting to see if that one makes it through.
All right. A listener asks about a House bill, a House bill that would outlaw so-called discrimination by making it illegal for a bank, a credit card processor, or any other financial institution to turn down customers because of their involvement in the firearms industry. What's this one about?
That pretty much sums it up. It's kind of an extension of what went on in the State Bond Commission that reacted to Citigroup and Bank of America last year when they adopted policies, gun control policies. The Bond Commission said, we're not going to do business with them. We're not going to allow them to apply to handle some highway funding for highway projects because of that particular issue. They decided the supporters of this measure decided that it needed to be broader, and so it's made it through the House, and so I guess we're going to see how that's going to do.
And the issue before the Bond Commission was, of course, fueled by the support from one Senator John Neely Kennedy, and switching for just a bit here to the national scene. Our junior senator yesterday questioned Bill Barr, the U.S. Attorney General, before the Senate Judiciary Committee about the Mueller report. And Kennedy says the Russian investigation is over, despite congressional Democratic efforts and the release of Robert Mueller's letter, which he deems much ado about nothing. Kennedy says a lot of people got their bowels in an uproar over it. It turned out to be much ado about nothing. John Kennedy obviously supporting, as one would expect, the President of the United States, who he, every chance he gets a photo op with the President, John Kennedy takes it.
It's not surprising. I mean, I'm not sure I can get on board with the it's much ado about nothing, at least from what I've been seeing and reading in the newspaper. But it's not surprising that the Senator Kennedy and perhaps the rest of the Republican delegation will say pretty much the same thing.
Elizabeth Warren, the colleague of Senator Kennedy in the U.S. Senate, one of the Club of 100, says in a tweet, A.G. Barr is a disgrace. His alarming efforts to suppress the Mueller report show that he's not a credible head of federal law enforcement. He should resign. And based on the actual facts in the Mueller report, Congress should begin impeachment proceedings against the president. That from Elizabeth Warren, who is way different than Senator John Kennedy or Senator William Morgan Cassidy on this support or not of the President of the United States. And both Kennedy and Cassidy have been with the president on everything, including being with him in his aversion to allowing people to look at his financial records, in particular his tax returns.
Right, and I think that statement kind of supports what I just said a few minutes ago, that there's more to what's going on than much ado about nothing.
Okay, 877-217-5757 for Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on the air with Mark. Hi, Phil. Good morning to you.
I grew up in an age when school lunches were affordable and healthy, and they were cooked in the cafeteria and not shipped in as food surplus from the government. You could afford to go to college. I mean, I honestly think our country's sailing in as if it's a flat earth, and we're sailing toward the edge of it. We're going completely in the wrong direction. It's really it's just unacceptable.
All right, Phil. A lot of people are saying that we live for today. We turn a blind eye to climate change, and we allow a roaring deficit to continue. Those who complained under Obama often are silent under the deficit, which has gone up even more, a lot more, under President Trump. Are we living our life as though we don't have to be responsible for those who come after us?
Well, I know that there's plenty of opinions on this. The other side would say that that they're living their life in a proper way, you know, and so, you know, I guess, you know, yes, he's got a point too.
Okay. Paul in Opelousas. Paul, you're on with Mark. Hi, Paul.
How you doing, Jim? I want to invite you to Opelousas tomorrow because it looks like we are the center of the state right now.
Yeah, we've got more the vice president coming there, right?
Yeah, and yesterday we had a U.S. representative that we haven't seen. In Opelousas, running for governor. And he came to Opelousas yesterday. I was like, what is going on? So we invite you to come to Opelousas. Yes, we're having all this attention. What do you think of all this attention that Opelousas is getting for a very tragic thing that happened, a very bad thing that happened, that actually brought Baptist, Catholic, and non-denominational churches together in Opelousas? Thank you.
Bye. All right. The Vice President Mike Pence coming to Opelousas, and it's in response to the awful church burnings, three of them in St. Landry Parish. Mark, what do you think of the Vice President gracing our state with his presence?
Well, I think the burning of the churches kind of reaches back to one of the worst times in American history when in the fight for civil rights, when African-American churches were burned down as a political statement. I'm not sure. We haven't really heard enough about whether this is a political statement, but it is something that that reminds us and of what has gone forth. And so I'm glad to see that the vice president is coming down. I mean, it sounds like he was saying that the U.S. Representative Abrams and Abrams has came down to visit as well. And I think that's a good thing. You know, the governor has already been there. So,
yeah, well, Ralph Abraham's running for governor, and this is a huge issue of importance to our state and the nation. And Opelousas is a wonderful city and should not have to endure something like this. Jim Gates, my friend, college chum, he lives in Opelousas, prominent lawyer there. He says it's Mayberry, but Mike Pence
with good
Mayberry.
Food. Mayberry with good food.
There you go. 877-217-5757. Jan in Mid-City says, last week we buried the lead and wants us to talk about the break-in at the mansion. The governor found a vagrant sleeping on his couch, a man who got in there somehow, some way, broke an antique table and decided to take a nap. Mark, what in the world is going on with the governor's security detail?
Well, I think the security detail, and they're investigating this now, is going to have to answer a lot of questions. So the man had to scale the fence, break into a locked building that has state police all over it, and then fall asleep for a while, apparently, in the downstairs. That's something that's being investigated. They're not really commenting on it because they're saying that, oh, it's part of the investigation, so we're not going to say.
Now, the governor, many may not know this, but when we had the flood a few years ago, 3 years ago, he moved into the president of LSU's house, which is vacant there on Lakeshore Drive. And he has told people that he liked it so much that if he had not been forced by law to go back to the mansion, he would have been content just staying there. Maybe he could get better protection on the lakes at LSU, Mark.
Well, it's a beautiful house. I'm not sure the last couple of LSU chancellors have wanted to own their own homes, but that's a beautiful house. So I can understand his him liking it, and there certainly would be more people passing by every day.
That's a big perk. It used to be, anyway, to have your housing taken care of. Perhaps it would be a nice place for Will Wade to live.
Well, with those big windows there, it would be difficult to, you know, watch football in your underwear.
There you go. And there is a waste treatment plant right across the street, but, hey, you can't have everything.